Hi everyone, this is Marsha, and I'm the director and founder of the Brooklyn Caribbean Literary Festival. I'm thrilled and elated to announce the birth and launch of our brand new podcast, CocoaPod. Consider the aromatic CocoaPod and how, after carefully ripening under the Caribbean sun, it generously offers up its rich fruit in due season. CocoaPod by BCLF aims to provide a similar delight. Each episode is a seed, a nugget of an original Caribbean story told in the voice of its writer. Each story, an infinite gift by the offshoot of an ancient griot tradition. As a whole, Caribbean stories are like a mighty tree whose branches extend, offering shade and comfort wherever her children settle. From my team and the legion of Caribbean writers behind us, we bring to you the warmest of welcomes.
Hello, my name is Clavis Natera, and I am the author of the debut novel, Neruda on the Park. I'm so happy to be reading today from chapter 4, Eusebia. On the first floor, Eusebia rang the bell to the Tongues apartment. One of the women opened the door. "Let's go for a walk," Eusebia said. Her friend nodded, went to get the others. Moments later, they were outside, where the day was bright. The weather warmer than it should be. Eusebia's body felt sore, as if she'd actually gone for a long swim. She moved gingerly. The noise from the construction site got louder as they approached. Huge chunks of concrete were being dropped into a metal dumpster, sending sharp chills from their teeth to the bones of their jaws. The dust still lingered in the air, and all four of them fanned at the sting in their eyes. The Tongues blinked repeatedly, tears rolling down their cheeks. They didn't wipe them away. Eusebia's eyes got red from the dust, but none of her tears fell. "What happened to you yesterday?" one of the women asked. It was a strange way to ask the question. Eusebia turned the words in her mind. Had she heard what was said? "I don't know," she said. The women nodded like they knew what she meant, but she was sure they didn't. "Jose died," one of the women said. Eusebia didn't know who Jose was. "I'm really sorry," she said, searching her mind for that name. "The boy," the three of them said at once, annoyed, hurt. "Go home," someone had carved into the skin of the young boy's back, she remembered. The banging ahead culminated in a huge crashing sound. Because the empty space of the missing building was so wide, the echo was magnified. It shook them. The Tongues smiled self-consciously. How silly to be startled by noise. "You feeling okay?" one of the women asked, all three of them eyeing her up and down. She'd stopped walking. "Better snap out of it," she said to herself. She shrugged, moved. How to describe it to her friends? She felt like herself, but also as if something important had happened to that self and she could appreciate it from a distance, like her body belonged to someone else. Had the fall loosened something, someone within her? She put the thought out of her mind. What she was about to say would be crazy enough. Her idea required them to trust she hadn't lost her mind. The group decided to head up to the rooftop of 291 East Nother Park, the building directly adjacent to the construction site, opposite 600 West. From the fourth floor rooftop, the sisters leaned over the safety railings, elbows on metal, in an attempt to catch their breath. Eusebia hung back, her heartbeat pounding on her left eyelid, in her fingertips, in the slight trembling of her left cheek. This had nothing to do with her falling down. This was vertigo. It had been years since she'd forced herself to look down from any height. Eusebia willed herself to stop that sensation of movement, of falling and twirling through the air in opposite directions at once, a nauseous feeling. Usually, this was the moment that forced her to close her eyes and seek lower ground. Not today. On weak knees, she walked to where the women stood and inhaled deeply as she leaned over them. Beneath them, it was as if a bomb had exploded. Bricks, pipes, concrete, refrigerators, stoves, even farther away, discarded toys, a doll with matted blonde hair, a blue truck missing a wheel. She was puzzled at the sharpness of her vision. How could they have done all of that in 3 days? How could they possibly have gotten that done so fast? One of the women asked. They discarded that old building to make room for what? The tongues asked her. Eusebia never imagined there would be this much space. I have an idea on how to stop all of this from happening, she said. The tongues looked at her curiously. What if we just scare everyone into thinking this neighborhood is really bad, she said. The women smiled, thinking it a joke, brilliant in its simplicity. How would we do that, they asked. Eusebia could clearly see the unvoiced thought that it would be too easy to work. Eusebia spoke in a confident way, as if this conversation had already happened. She explained she meant recruiting their neighbors who would act out crimes throughout the neighborhood with other volunteers who'd be the victims of these crimes. You mean fake crimes, they asked. No, not fake, real. Who'd be crazy enough to move to a neighborhood amid a crime spree? What kind of crimes, they asked. Eusebia was quiet. She had come up with a list, but she knew if they participated, helped formulate it, they'd be in. What would scare you, she asked. What would be bad enough? This is the kind of idea that can destroy a community, they said. That can save it, she corrected. The women stared at her, worried. They understood she was serious. She'd moved too fast. Eusebia extended her arm around the neighborhood, lovingly sweeping all they could see. Over by their side of the park, Raul's sheep in place, the cleaners owned by the Chinitos who were born in DR, the liquor store, the dentist. She wrapped her arm around herself, signaling what they couldn't see. The smell of water boiling for raw vegetables, of meat sizzling in pans, laundry being folded, children being kissed, phone calls back home to people who needed help, who would be lost without the support of those who traveled here. We can just come up with a list of things people are scared of, she said. The women exchanged looks. They spoke to each other with the simple speed of a blink. But now Eusebia was in on it, an eavesdropper. Questions floated between all four of them. Could it work? Was it worth trying? What else as an alternative? It was true. Fear worked. Fear always worked. She turned her body away from them to the park. Her phone vibrated in her pocket. Luz or Vladimir must be worried. But she'd care for them later. Now she turned her attention to the destruction beneath them. It talked out something in the women, but Eusebia was the only one who called out the dead boy's name. She had a strange feeling of being anchored to the tarmac on the roof for a while. It made sense when the blinding sky turned into a black sky and the sun was replaced by a yellow, pot-marked moon. There was complete stillness and silence in the worksite. The man had gone for the day. If we don't stop it, Eusebia said, it will not be stopped. This is the kind of idea that might destroy, they said again. Eusebia followed their gaze around Arthur Park as they took in the yellow light that pulsed softly from the windows of the brownstones that flanked the park with halos of rainbows bordering the light. There was the sound of a television, of music, of laughter, the natural noises of a neighborhood that shut the hostility outside what they'd made here. Somewhere far away, a baby cried. A newborn by the sound of the urgency in its voice, as if underlining what was truly at stake. It wasn't just about them. And so, impossibly, the tongues agreed to go along. Thank you so much.
We hope that you enjoyed this episode. Please take a moment to follow CocoPod and turn on your notifications so that you don't miss new stories when they drop. One last thing. Caribbean stories and Caribbean writers need our help. Show your support by sharing and downloading this podcast as far and as widely as you can. Buy their books, support independent bookshops, and request Caribbean titles from your local libraries. Remember that a rising tide lifts all ships. Give thanks. For more Caribbean storytelling goodness, follow CocoaPod and BCLF Always Lit on all major podcast platforms.